Well, hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of Dinner with a Side of Sci-Fi. I'm Jason.
And I'm Dava.
Today we will be making stuffed corn fillets while we discuss the dark forest. So what's the recipe, Dava?
So these are corn fillets, which I think we've made before, which are basically a mycoprotein chicken substitute. And these, you slice them in half, stuff them with some cheese and cranberry, batter them, and then bake them. So sounds pretty interesting and good.
Yeah, that sounds great.
And then The Dark Forest. So I'm going to do the summary for you all. This book was kind of a lot, so the summary is kind of a lot. So, you know, fasten your seatbelts. All right, The Dark Forest. So we leave off after the three-body problem, and humans now have 400 years to plan against the Trisolarians coming and invading them, but they can't openly plan a strategy because the subatomic sophons can record and report on any activity that humans do. But however, the sophons cannot read minds. So what the humans decide is that they're going to choose four wall facers. So these people are chosen to think up a plan and not reveal it to anyone, so that they hope that the Trisolarians can't figure out their plan. And it's a plan to kind of defeat the Trisolarian fleet that's approaching Earth. So three powerful men are chosen, and then one kind of random person, Luo Ji, is chosen to be the wall facers. So they all start drafting up grand plans of new technology. The first three, while Luo Ji is kind of really doesn't want to do it, and he ends up just finding a beautiful snow retreat and orders all the staff to find him his imaginary dream girl. So they basically have all the resources of the world to develop their plans. Anything they say, they get, basically. So Luo Ji says, hey, this is all part of my plan to defeat the Trisolarians, that you find me this dream house in Scandinavia or somewhere cold. And also, maybe you could find this dream girl for me. And then also get me this $300,000 bottle of wine, which we'll talk about later. Or I will, because that part was gross. Anyways, okay. So the Earth Trisolarian organization, the ETO, so that's kind of the Earth people who love the Trisolarians, they assign a wall breaker, so someone who tries to figure out the plan, to each of them. Okay, so our first wall breaker is Frederick Tyler, former Secretary of Defense of the U.S., and his plan is he creates a space force equipped with the ability for him to allow them to blow up on his command. Kind of reminded me a little of Ender's Game. But he actually has a deeper intention of bringing the Trisolarians ice for their use and surrendering to the Trisolarians, but then has another deeper intention of blowing them up when he's doing this gift. His wall breaker figures this out, and then Tyler's so upset he shoots himself in despair. Manuel Ray Diaz is the former president of Venezuela. He's another wall breaker. He works on nuclear explosions on Mercury, but his secret plan is to create an explosion that shoots Mercury into the sun, which will cause the sun to consume the solar system and kill humanity. So he's figured out, and he returns to Venezuela and stoned to death by his former constituents. And then Bill Hines, a neuroscientist, he develops the ability to implant beliefs as his strategy. So the UN uses that to implant victory into soldiers. Victory against the Trisolarians. But we later find out in the book that his wall facer was actually his wife, and they actually were imprinting defeat onto the soldiers. And Luo Ji is, you know, he's really not doing much, but then he does kind of remember some conversations he had with Yi Wenji, who was the protagonist from the first book, and he casts a spell on a nearby star, basically. So they all go into cryosleep, so that they can be closer to when the Trisolarians come. They wake up in hundreds of years. And now things have gotten better. Humans have gotten better at technology. And they actually have a fleet of ships that are really advanced, and they're going to go meet the Trisolarians. And also, the world now is underground, and people live in tree-like structures. All right, so they have their big fleet out there, and a Trisolarian probe shows up. And there's more of them coming, but one arrives, and it's this beautiful silver droplet, so they call it the droplet. And they're kind of looking at it. They can't really figure it out. It has some kind of strange, strong force technology that they can't really learn about it. But then it decides that it's gonna activate, and it basically destroys like 2,000 ships in the fleet, all of them except for two. So these two ships flee the system. And meanwhile, the Space Force have also sent another character out for some reason, and four people followed him. So there's seven ships out there now, but then they all kind of get suspicious of each other because they don't know how much resources they're going to have. So basically, they destroy each other until there's only one of each group left. All right, so now the humanity is kind of upset. Luoji is made a wall facer again after the UN notices that the star he cast his spell on has been destroyed. And then he goes on to confirm his Dark Forest theory, which the book says, the Dark Forest theory is the conjecture that many alien civilizations exist throughout the universe, but they are both silent and hostile, maintaining their undetectability by humanity for fear of being destroyed by another hostile and undetected civilization. In this framing, it is presumed that any spacefaring civilization would view any other intelligent life as an inevitable threat, and thus destroy any nascent life that makes itself known. As a result, the electromagnetic spectrum would be relatively quiet, without evidence of any intelligent alien life, as in a dark forest filled with armed hunters stalking through the trees like ghosts. So basically, he marked that star, he revealed where it was, and some unknown alien destroyed it. So now he has this new strategy. He basically forces the Trisolarians into a truce by threatening to broadcast their location. But the Trisolarians have something up their sleeve. They prevent this by using some kind of EMF waves that's going to prevent them from broadcasting. So Luoji seemingly gives up, and he starts this project where he's putting nuclear bombs throughout the solar system that is going to create dust that when the probes get here, we can see where they are. But this is actually a message. So if these bombs blow up, it's going to reveal the location of Trisolarian's location as well as Earth. So he does reveal this to Asofan. He asks Asofan to talk to him. He tells them if he dies, these bombs will go off and the Trisolarian's location and Earth's location will be spread into the universe and those malevolent aliens can kill them. So essentially this ends on a stalemate with the Trisolarians agreeing to not invade Earth in exchange for Earth not revealing their locations. So kind of a dark, gloomy end. To the book.
I thought it was a little positive because, like, you know, the Trisolarians, they call off the probes and they fly away from the solar system. So he sort of wins and they talk to him.
So, like, at the very end, too, one of the Trisolarian that first talked to Yi Wenji in the first book and told her to stay away, don't contact us, it's dangerous. She talks to Luoji at the end again, and it's kind of a little harmonious and
yeah, they talk about love.
Yeah, it's like a little like sparkle of hope, you know, like the big stronghold of humanity, our hope and our attempt to,
yeah,
you know, be more positive.
Yeah. So when they were sort of revealing all of, when they were going through the book, I kept thinking of Ender's Game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I kept thinking of in the Speaker of the Dead series, Ender has this thing where there's Fromlin, which is defined as a stranger recognized as human, but from a different planet. Ramen were defined as strangers that were recognized as human, not recognized as human, but another sentient entity. And then they are not a threat. And then there's the Varelse, which are foreign, you can't communicate them, you can't know their intentions, and therefore they have to be seen as a threat. And that's how they justified wiping out the buggers. In a lot of ways, that's how the Trisolarians see humans. Because the Trisolarians communicate telepathically, and for that reason, they don't have lying or deceit. And humans do. And when they realize that humans, that they can't trust what humans say, they become afraid of them because they don't know that they could ever trust someone that can lie. Which was, they're so removed from everything that's going on.
Yeah.
But, you know, you have this ominous fleet approaching.
Yeah. And the beginning of the book, everyone is pretty in despair of this coming because they just don't have the technology and they can't develop the technology because the Sofans can kind of interfere. They can interfere with particle physics and all that technology that would help us, but we just can't do it because they're preventing it.
What did you think of the Wallfacer program? The Wallfacer program.
I thought it was interesting. I mean, what are you going to do? You know, what are you supposed to do?
It's tricky. I feel like it's an impossible mission. Now, it's just a fluke that there's a lot of characters in this book, and I will not remember any of their names.
Yeah, I do have a character list, so.
So who's the main protagonist?
Luo G.
His whole thing with the spell on the star is sort of, it's kind of amazing that it just works out, and that an alien race attacks and destroys this star based on his transmission. If that hadn't happened, he would have never gotten the idea.
Yeah. I mean, he might have, because he, like, if you remember in the very beginning. So I read this book. I couldn't get into this book when I first read it. So I read the first chapter.
The first chapter's tough. It's
like 12 times. It's from the perspective of an ant.
Yeah, while this conversation's going on.
Yeah, he's like walking up and down, which I didn't even realize he was on a grave until.
Yeah.
Like the eighth time I read it. So I'm like, oh yes, this is when he was talking to Yi Wenji and she gave him the theory of cosmic sociology. So he might have kind of come to it later, but I definitely think that star blowing up was pretty lucky and it did help them in sight there.
And we learned that he thinks that the reason why the Trisolarians were trying to kill him specifically was because of that conversation, which was...
Okay, so the Trisolarians already knew about the Dark Forest theory.
Right, and they were surprised that we learned about it so late.
And then they were trying to... It seems like they would be able to kill him pretty easily, though.
Well, they did all that stuff, so let's see. So they, when they finally gave the order, he hid underground, and they created that virus.
Yeah.
And then he got sick, and then they put him... They cryogenically froze him and until they could cure the disease. Because it affected him worse than everyone else.
Yes.
And then when he woke up, all the little machines in the underground city kept trying to attack and kill him.
Yes.
Cars crashed, and his, like, electric waiter stabbed at him. So he moved above ground where there was fewer risks from all the robotic stuff. And then, so they wanted him to go.
Yeah. Why did they stop attempting to kill him?
I don't think they did. I think that they, there was nothing that they could attack him with on the surface.
Yeah, okay.
Because the Sophons can't really do anything. Like, they're really just, they can affect particles.
Yeah.
So they can prevent us from learning particle physics, but they can't do much else. Except they can monitor.
So how do you think he got chosen as a Wallfacer? Do you think Yi Wenji had some, like, pull with this before
it has she died? To be, because...
It's the only way I can think of why he would get picked. Because
he tried to go down the path of xenosociology, or what do they call
it? Unless there was, like, some sympathetic Trisolarian that kind of put it in... Because they knew he knew.
I guess we don't know. He was shocked. He thought he was arrested.
Yeah.
And then they give him all this power, and then he tries to reject it.
Mm-hmm.
And then they're like, ha ha, you can't reject it. We're just going to pretend that's part of your plan. So he makes his little perfect paradise with his perfect dream girl. And
so I thought this was really bizarre. And this is kind of where I first started paying attention when I first read the book the first time. Because he has a girlfriend who's a writer. And she's like, oh, just imagine your perfect love. Just imagine it. And then he like goes to imagines this woman and like creates a woman in his head and like, goes on dates with nobody and, like, sits by the fire and, like, drives around. Kind of weird.
I thought it was a little weird, too.
And then I think he tells his professor or, like, somebody else, like, oh, yeah, that's the most perfect kind of love, the one you invent in your head and blah, blah, blah.
I know a lot of writers. I don't know anyone that has an imaginary girlfriend or boyfriend in their head.
Yeah, like, you're sitting by the fire by yourself, and you're, like, thinking of your imaginary
Yeah,
girlfriend.
And they're so real to you that you can have a conversation with them in real time?
Yeah, no. That's weird.
Now they did say that they're so real to you that you can't even control them, which was a bit like, Breakfast of Champions. Kurt Vonnegut could only control so much.
Yeah.
After a while, inertia carried them forward. So, maybe Kurt Vonnegut agrees.
Well, and then I thought it was, you know, I don't know, I probably wouldn't have done that. But it was a move to just be like, oh yeah, just get me a fancy house. Just find this house in my mind.
Yeah, which was very specific. It was, he wanted something in a tropical climate, but with snow peaks.
No, it wasn't, I don't think it was tropical, was it?
thought it was warm, though.
No, it was cold. There was snow.
In the peaks only.
I thought it was snowy because they said it ended up being in Scandinavia somewhere.
Okay. Well,
Anyways.
Yeah.
Very specific location.
Mm-hmm. But he's way cheaper than everyone else still, though, because yeah. they want, like, space fleets and fighter jets and blowing up Mercury. You know, yeah, detonating a hydrogen bomb on Mercury, that would just would be very expensive. And they had to dig a hole in it first.
That's true. And it was a lot cheaper. I mean, he should have asked for, like, a couple houses.
Mm-hmm.
And then I love when he's, like, watching the news, and they talk about they found this cask of wine from, like, 300 years ago, and it was in a shipwreck, and, like, it's drinkable. And he's like, I need that wine. And they're like, sir, like, that's not really...
It's part of the plan.
Like, it's part of the plan. And they're like, okay. So they spend, like, $200,000, and they get the bottle of wine, and he basically pours it. It's, like, emerald green.
And
which is like, maybe don't drink that. And it's basically gotten metal contamination from the cask.
Yeah, and he's sick the whole next day.
Yeah.
Serves him right. But he has a baby with the dream girl.
Yeah, and then he asks, so Dashi, which was the cop from the first book, is featured in this book as well.
He was one of the more likable characters.
Yeah, he was like kind of like the everyman type guy. So he's in this book as well, like kind of as, I don't know if he's his bodyguard or something.
My boy.
Yeah. So he goes out and finds this dream girl for...
It was weird. They actually sit there and they use like a police sketching app, and he describes her, and then they go out and find her and bring her to him, and she's exactly as she pictured based on her appearance alone.
Yeah, and even like she dresses in dark colors, but with a flash of white somewhere, like a white collar or like a white, like, line to her jacket.
It was very specific and it was a little weird.
I wonder if that's some, like, kind of translation that got lost.
I was hoping that all the stuff with the paintings, because she's an artist,
mm-hmm.
and she's talking a lot about traditional Chinese painting and how, because you're using such faint inks, a lot of times the negative space is the primary feature of the painting. And I was convinced that his plan was going to form something around that. Like, something about what you're not looking at is what's important.
Oh.
And
that's kind of true.
Yeah.
That is what happened. What you're not looking at is where you are.
Yeah.
Like, everyone was looking at such obvious, kind of classic, offensive techniques, and he totally looked the other way, you know? He looked in the negative space. That's good, Jason. That's really good.
You like that?
Wow.
You know, because I think that there's also, by proving the Dark Forest hypothesis, he also sort of creates the enemy of my enemy is my friend situation with the Tricellarans. That means there's other threatening aliens out there.
Yeah.
I still think they should just give them Mars. As long as we can live harmoniously.
I guess they'd have to terraform Mars, though, because they still want... They want our lush, beautiful Earth, you know, with our water.
But it's not going to get destroyed by the sun. And
that's true.
They probably have the technology. And if we're willing to share resources as part of the agreement.
You know, this book actually inspired me to do a painting. So there's a scene towards the end where the droplet is coming to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And Dashi and Luoji, like, drive to the desert. And they, like, step out of the car. And it's, like, low sun on the horizon in the desert. So, like, I was at camping with my sisters, and she had, like, an art kit, so, like, I painted that scene.
Did you? Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
It's, and he was convinced the droplet was going to come and kill him.
Yep. And it didn't. It just went to the Lagrange point, right?
It was monitoring and broadcasting that signal to prevent us from using the sun again.
Ah, yes.
Which makes sense, because we destroyed a star.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, the third book does have a lot of, like, art in it.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a big... The third book is, like, totally weird. It gets crazy.
Well, I thought this one got a little crazy.
This one got crazy, and the next one just, like, it just goes...
I kind of felt like the whole wall facer thing. Like, I feel like the author kind of got bored with it.
Mm-hmm.
So he just killed the wall facers or had them put themselves to sleep and jumped forward and, like, we're not doing that anymore.
I mean, I didn't really get the Bill Hines one as much. Like, the one who imprinted people to be victorious, and then it's like, no, I imprinted them to be defeatist.
Well, no, so there was... they thought there was only one machine, and they locked it up, and there was actually three more machines, and they've been using it to mass create the fetus. And then, yeah, but that's kind of fucked up that his wife was his wall breaker.
Well, then Luoji's was himself.
Right. But it, not appointed by the Trisolarans. But maybe he kind of was able to think things through better because he thought like a wall breaker. I liked that he had a conversation with them. That was kind of cool.
At the end?
At the end, the Trisolarans always like, they talk to him through the Sophon, and they can, because they work through quantum entanglement, they can speak in real time.
Yeah, I like that too. I thought that was, I mean, I'm not like good at, I always am shocked. You know, books always shock me. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe that happened. So I was just like, oh my God, he's getting them. He's pulling one over on
him. He did, and I didn't realize that's what had happened.
Yeah.
Because we didn't find out what his plan was about triangulating that star until that moment.
Yeah.
And I kept thinking about that star that was flickering a few years ago, and everyone was like, it's an alien megastructure! And I was like, oh, I wonder if that's like how like the things work. Like, I wonder if that's how they, when the bombs go off, if that's what aliens would see, if they'd see the sun flickering in this weird artificial way.
Huh. Yeah, that's a interesting, I haven't really thought about what it would look like from Earth. Probably flicker and then go out.
The,
create a nebula.
No, I'm talking about the, when they set off the hydrogen bombs in our solar system to create, because they were going to create an image that aliens could see, and that image would give the location of the Trisolarans, but it would also single out our Earth.
Mm-hmm.
But that still seemed like a stretch to me. Like, aliens would have to be looking at the sun. I guess they could look at everything if they're advanced. And they'd also then have to interpret the image. Like, it's a lot of information to put by, like, darkening sections of the sun.
I guess we have to assume that these hunters in the dark forest are pretty advanced if they're...
Well, they blew up a sun.
Yeah.
I mean, just like in Babamers.
Yeah.
They probably sent something at a high relative... And what was weird is Hubble 3 was strong enough to be able to see the projectile.
Do you think we're, like, stupid for, like, sending out all these probes and, like, broadcasting stuff? Do you think we're going to get dark forested?
I don't think that anything we're sending out is powerful enough
at this point. Yeah, nothing's really left.
Like, signals have reached alien planets, but at this point they're so decayed. It's not, like, just pointing an antenna.
Well, it's interesting, too. It's like you can't really tell the location it came from. Like, you need to know, like, a couple...
Yeah, you only know the distance.
Yeah.
And...
Like, they were saying at some point, it was like, if you're flying over the ocean in a plane, you know, it'd be like trying to pinpoint, like, a molecule of water. You know, like, you know it's down there, but you can't really, you know, it's the ocean, you know, so.
Yeah. And we have quite a few stars within 10 light years of us.
That's true. Like, Alpha Centauri. Isn't that where the Trisolarans are?
Yes, the Trisolarans from Alpha Centauri, but then we also have, Delta Eridani and all those stars. I only know them because of the Babaverse books. And then that's also where they went in the book that the guy from The Martian wrote.
Project Hail Mary.
Project Hail Mary. Yeah. They go to one of those planets, one of those stars.
I actually sat outside. Jupiter was out the other night. So I'm like, this was me having a total moment. I like went outside with my binoculars. I'm like, well, let me see if I can see the rings of Jupiter with my binoculars. And I was like, couldn't see him, and I mixed up Saturn and Jupiter.
Oh.
Like, you can't... Jupiter has rings, but they're, like, invisible.
But you could have possibly seen the moons
of Jupiter. So it did look a little weird and blurry, which I'm like, maybe that was a moon? Like, maybe I saw Io?
How strong are your binoculars?
I know
they don't need to be that strong.
They're not super strong. But actually, so I know you also have, as an aside, you have season tickets to the Hippodrome.
Yes.
So it's kind of hard to see from where I am. And the guy sitting next to me last time had binoculars.
Oh, that's clever.
I'm like, I'm going to do that next time. I'm going to bring binoculars.
It's fun. It's I've never done a theater pass like that before.
Me neither. And like, we're pretty far up.
So are we. We're in the top section about halfway up towards the left side.
We're right on the aisle, like by the door, which is nice for leaving.
Yeah.
And like running down to the bathroom. But I definitely think I'm going to try bringing binoculars just to see like a little closer up a couple times, see what they look like.
I wish they'd do a three-body problem musical. Can you imagine?
Oh, my God. It would be, like, so ridiculous.
It would be all in Chinese.
Yeah. Well, they are doing a Netflix series, I think, in January.
Yes. Yes, so next month.
Woo!
So, yeah, I'm excited about the Netflix series. I told Mark that I'm going to make him watch, and I'm going to take his cell phone away so that he has to watch it with
me. So he's going to pay attention? Yeah. That's smart.
Because I think that he'll like it. And the trailer looks really good.
Yeah.
And it really does look like... I think just because of what... Who's the woman?
Yi Wenjing.
Like, because what she did was so awful, it was hard for me to empathize with her.
Yeah.
But the show looks like it does a really good job of showing how awful her experience was and why she thinks the human race doesn't deserve the Earth.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, there's monsters out there, too. You know, there's just mm-hmm. people who are monsters, you know, so. So what did you think about the ships? So the two ships that escaped the droplet that eventually blew each other up.
I was completely surprised by them attacking each other. Like, it made sense to me from a perspective of we only have two redundant sets of replacement parts.
Yeah.
And we're going to have to travel for 2,000 years. Mm-hmm. But they just had all these meetings and they were talking about their government and it felt very kumbaya. It seems like they switched to cannibalism pretty quickly.
Well, and also, isn't there a benefit to having more genetic diversity in those type of groups? Unless they can control that all with, like, technology.
Did they say how many people were on the ships?
I don't know.
And I guess, I imagine that in 200 years, our medical understanding would get better. Because that wouldn't be limited by the Sophons.
That's true. So they could select... Like, take out the bat, like... The
yeah, so, like, they could... Whatever. Yeah, exactly. They could genetically... Or they could at least only fertilize with embryos that are missing the genetic
They
issues.
Probably have a stock of embryos on the ship, or...
Like, no, because... Probably not, because that would have probably qualified as defeatism, which was illegal.
Oh, yes.
I thought that was stupid, too. I think an arc just makes sense.
Just throw one out there.
It makes sense because what if something else happens?
Yeah.
Like, at least this way we're guaranteed.
Just have a backup.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't have to be your main thing, but put, like, 10,000 people on an Ark and send them off.
And imagine all the technology you discover to help fight the Trisolarans as you build the Ark. Yeah, I thought so, too. I thought that was silly, that they should have just built an Ark anyway.
Yeah.
And it was weird that the rooms were spherical. That was odd.
Well, the new planet was weird, too. Like, how they were, like, living in tree leaves.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I appreciated it.
But they all had this little flying backpack, the bicycles.
It was different. You know, that's not usually what we read about, so I appreciated that. But
and the Earth's surface, because... So the economy collapses under the totalitarian rule of trying to prep for the Trisolarans, and they make it illegal to be environmental, and, like, huge swaths of the Earth are just desert now. So the Earth's probably pretty awful.
Yeah.
On the surface, so that's I guess it makes sense why they would go underground.
Well, and I liked how they had so it was took place over several hundred years, and just the social tide of feelings just changed so much. Like, they were supporting the Wallfacers. Now we love Luoji. Now we hate Luoji.
It seemed,
like, you're a monster. You're a savior.
The people in the future also seem super naive to me. Like, they're like, no, our analysis shows that their fleet is diminishing, and it's not going to be any problem for our fleet to wipe them out. And
yeah,
and then the teardrop just, like, destroys the entire fleet. Like, one probe.
And it's like, boop, 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 and they don't know what's happening.
And it's only doing it by, like, just crashing through the ships.
And it's like, turning them into molten, like, nuclear molten lava.
Because it's hitting their fuel.
Yeah. Just what a waste of resources and life. And that, you know, not like anyone could predict that, but it's just like...
But it was like millions of people in space.
Yeah.
And it was stupid that they all wanted to be close because they needed to share credit for catching the probe. If they had been further apart, there, like, fewer of them would have probably died.
Well, the probe was too cool, too, because before it attacked them, they went, like, a couple of them went and studied it. They brought it into their ship.
Yeah, they could touch it.
And they were, like, kept magnifying it, thinking it would get rough looking because it was perfectly smooth. And they just kept magnifying it, and it was still perfectly smooth.
Like, even at the point with the electron microscope where you'd start to see the atomic structure,
yeah,
it was
perfectly
smooth.
Smooth.
And there was no damage where the clamp that picked it up grabbed it, and it was, like, 20,000 pounds per square inch or something crazy when it grabbed it.
Surprised so they it, determined yeah. it was like strong force. Some kind of strong force.
It was absolute zero, too.
Strong force material.
Yeah. Because they have much better particle physics than we do.
Yeah.
Stupid Trisolaris.
I know. All right. So we start making...
Yeah, let's do it.
Started. Okay. So we prepped the... So we're basically stuffing them with cheese and cranberries and then dipping it in a batter and baking it. So we are making out the cheese. And it's interesting. It's like shred the goat cheese. And I was like, have you seen goat cheese before on our website? And it's like...
You can buy blocks of it though, right?
Well, it says if you... How do you freeze... How do you shred soft cheese? You put it in the freezer and then you can shred it.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah. So I put a mozzarella and a goat cheese. We're going to mix goat cheese and mozzarella.
Interesting.
And it's not a lot because these are tiny.
Yeah.
So... We're going to just...
I'm intrigued. I'm going to try the mozzarella.
I think we need like half of that or like two-thirds. And then...
Should I grate it?
Like a quarter of this. Yeah, we can grate it. We can either try... We could use a Parmesan grater or we could use this guy.
I guess since they're really hard, let's try this. Now, what do I do it into something?
Yeah, I'll get you a bowl. Let's see here.
And they're going to go together.
Yeah, we're going to mix the cheese together.
All right.
Is it grating?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. Oh.
It's three like little tiny nubs of mozzarella, so they're...
So sometimes I get those, especially in summer.
Mark buys Polio string cheese a lot.
Yeah.
Which is mozzarella.
That's pretty good too. 2 ounces soft cream cheese. Which is 2 ounces. Oh, I love cream cheese. How many ounces is it in a milliliter? 2 ounces.
I'm not good at metric conversions.
59 mil. Okay. So, maybe... I'm just going to throw in a spoonful.
Sounds good.
It's like 2 ounces.
It works. Okay. So the mozzarella is shredded.
And then like a quarter of that thing of goat cheese.
Okay, so I won't even unpeel it all.
Mm. Yeah, I don't think they really ate anything in this book.
No.
Did they mention food at all?
Not even at his like fancy like house in the country.
Just we could have had absinthe or something. Wait, not absinthe. Midori. Like, what's green?
Absinthe is green. We could have done absinthe. But then we would have had to get sick afterwards, and just the whole situation would have been good.
Alright, while you're doing that, I'm going to add...
Oh, check that out.
How about that? It's pretty sweet. That's a good tip to know.
The goat cheese is shredding perfectly. So just half of this.
That's
lump.
Really good to know. So it told me to mix some water with the flour. This is flour and cinnamon, actually.
Oh, okay.
So that should be interesting. So I'm just gonna whisk this.
Okay. So the cheese is shredded. I should mix all that together.
Yes, let's mix that. Do you want a spatula?
That would be great.
And I'm just gonna throw these cranberries in here. We should have made a batter like this for the bloomin' onion.
That's a good idea.
With like water on it.
I was looking after our episode came out, I spent some time looking like how do you air fry a bloomin' onion? And I found a few websites and there was like lots of steps, but it was possible to do. I don't think the recipe we picked was the best one.
No, I should have like quality controlled that a little better.
Well, we should have just fried it. I would have been fine with frying it.
In like a pan?
Yeah.
Pan frying it?
Yeah. Or like you just heat oil in a pot?
Alright.
Okay. Cheese is mixed.
Okay, so now what we're gonna do is we're going to kind of shove that in here.
Oh, inside the Corin?
Yes, I did pre-slice them.
So we could probably pipe it. Do you have a Ziploc bag?
I do have a Ziploc. That's a good idea.
Otherwise, we'll shred the Corin.
There you go.
Thank you.
Holiday,
yeah. Recipe with anything with dried cranberries.
With cranberries in it. Scissors too.
Thank you.
Probably make it big enough for the cranberry to get out.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's good.
Okay.
If it doesn't work, I'll make it bigger. Okay. So number one.
Oh yeah.
I feel like I'm making stuffed shells.
Have you made those before?
Yeah, you just you do this with the mozzarella, and I'm gonna make this bigger. You were right. Yeah, you just do this with the mozzarella and the cream cheese and all that stuff.
Oh yeah,
that's better. There's one.
I've been wanting to do this. This one was kind of bulging. I've been wanting to do this, like do some kind of stuffed. Because I used to love chicken cordon bleu when I ate chicken and ham.
Yeah, and I haven't done anything with corn since we've done it last. And I liked it. I was pleasantly surprised how good it was.
Yeah, it's really good. I eat it a lot because it's... And these little fillets are only 60 calories.
Oh, are they? Okay.
Yeah, so they're not... It's not like when you get like a veggie burger and it's like 10,000 calories.
Okay. So I guess the downside is it's a little pricey.
Yeah, so this was like $5.49 or something for a 4-pack.
Okay. I guess for one person, that's not too bad.
No. Okay, so now I guess we just dip it in here and then dip it in here.
Okay, so that's the flour and water mix.
Flour and water mix.
Which looks kind of like pudding.
Oh, yeah. That's going to stick real nice.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Look this would have been a great idea for the Bloomin' Onion.
Yeah. Take a picture of this before I put... Oh, my God. This is going to be good. I don't think I've ever done it. Like, I've never done this before.
No, I haven't either.
Never made, like, fried chicken or anything.
I've never done fried chicken this way. Like, usually I do, like, an egg for my batter. This is nice. They're, like, completely vegetable. Well, no, they're not. They're wrapping cheese.
Well, and actually the corn has egg whites in it.
Oh, does it? Okay.
They do make a vegan one, but I mean, I'm okay with eggs. So.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
So let me, we're on here, take a picture of these because this looks crazy. This looks crazy.
So do you think you're going to read the next book?
I already read it, actually.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
I was, I think that, I enjoyed the second one. I think that I'd like to read it. I'm thinking that maybe if the series gets renewed on Netflix, maybe we could read the third one.
I love the third one. It was insane. It got crazy. And the second one I had a hard time getting into, but the third one...
Not at all. The second one just started weird. It was weird that it was from the aunt's perspective.
And then they're just talking about, you know, the Tricelarians, and they're like, what are you talking about? I don't know. But, and so the first book and the third book had the same translator, and the second one had a different translator.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And the first translator, which I probably should have looked up his name, he's actually a science fiction writer himself.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
So I want to read some of his books, and he actually grew up in, like, the town next to me.
Nice.
In Connecticut.
That's pretty cool.
Well, two towns over, but yeah.
Okay, so we're going to pop these in for how long? At what temperature? So 350.
Computer. Set a timer for 20 minutes.
All right, so 350 for 20 minutes. That sounds great.
20 minutes. Starting now.
Oh my God, computer, you're going to be on the podcast. So then We're going to make some potatoes to go with it. Pretty straightforward.
Yeah, and then we'll be able to share. And next book we're reading... Okay, cool. The next book we're reading is Our Mission Hearts by Celeste Ng.
I actually don't want to pronounce that. It's NG.
Okay. So, looking forward to read that to you guys then. And everyone have a great holiday.
See you later. Bye.